The Cemetery of Letters. The Phoenicians, we are often reminded, produced no literature, although they allegedly invented the alphabet. Commentators discuss their Philistinism from the basis of this absence of a written legacy, asserting that by race or culture, they were more interested in commerce than in the arts. Accordingly, the Phoenician invention of the alphabet served the lower purpose of commercial record-keeping, rather than the more noble purpose of literary production. I remember finding on the shelves of a country house I once rented a mildewed history book by Will and Ariel Durant describing the Phoenicians as the merchant race. I was tempted to throw it in the fireplace. Well, it now seems that the Phoenicians wrote quite a bit, but using a perishable brand of papyrus that did not stand the biodegradative assaults of time. Manuscripts had a high rate of extinction before copyists and authors switched to parchment in the 2nd or 3rd century. Those not copied during that period simply disappeared. The neglect of silent evidence is endemic to the way we study comparative talent, particularly in activities that are plagued with winner-take-all attributes. We may enjoy what we see, but there's no point reading too much into success stories because we don't see the full picture. Recall the winner-take-all effect? Notice the large number of people who call themselves writers but are only temporarily operating the shiny cappuccino machines at Starbucks. The inequity in this field is larger than, say, medicine, since we rarely see medical doctors serving hamburgers. I can thus infer that I can largely gauge the performance of the latter profession's entire population from what sample is visible to me. Likewise with plumbers, taxi drivers, prostitutes, and those in professions devoid of superstar effects. Let us go beyond the discussion on extremistan and mediocristan in Chapter 3. The consequence of the superstar dynamic is that what we call literary heritage or literary treasures is a minute proportion of what has been produced cumulatively. This is the first point. How it invalidates the identification of talent can be derived immediately from it. Say you attribute the success of the 19th century novelist Honoré de Balzac to his superior realism, insights, sensitivity, treatment of characters, ability to keep the reader riveted, and so on. These may be deemed superior qualities that lead to superior performance if and only if those who lack what we call talent also lack these qualities. But what if there are dozens of comparable literary masterpieces that happen to perish? And following my logic, if there are indeed many perished manuscripts with similar attributes, then, I regret to say, your idol Balzac was just the beneficiary of disproportionate luck compared to his peers. Furthermore, you may be committing an injustice to others by favoring him. My point, I repeat, is not that Balzac is untalented, but that he's less uniquely talented than we think. Just consider the thousands of writers now completely vanished from consciousness. Their record doesn't enter into analyses. We don't see the tons of rejected manuscripts because these writers have never been published. The New Yorker alone rejects close to 100 manuscripts a day. So imagine the number of geniuses that we'll never hear about. In a country like France, where more people write books while, sadly, fewer people read them, respectable literary publishers accept 1 in 10,000 manuscripts they receive from first-time authors. Consider the number of actors who have never passed an audition, but would have done very well had they had that lucky break in life. The next time you visit a Frenchman of comfortable means, you'll likely spot the stern books from the collection Bibliothèque de la Pléiade, which their owner will never, almost never, read, mostly on account of their uncomfortable size and weight. Membership in the Pléiade means membership in the literary canon. The tomes are expensive. They have the distinctive smell of ultra-thin India paper, compressing the equivalent of 1,500 pages into the size of a drugstore paperback. They are supposed to help you maximize the number of masterpieces per Parisian square foot. The publisher Gallimard has been extremely selective in electing writers into the Pléiade collection. Only a few authors, such as the aesthete and adventurer André Malraux, have made it in while still alive. Dickens, Dostoevsky, Hugo, and Stendhal are in, along with Mallarmé, Sartre, Camus, and Balzac. Yet if you follow Balzac's own ideas, which I will examine next, you would accept that there is no ultimate justification for such an official corpus.